what you can do to balance your blood sugar. We'll be talking with Cheryl Myers in the first half of the show. In the second half of the show, we're going to be talking with Dr. Jonathan Beattie about digestion. And if you're having bloating or stomach problems, you want to listen into this section. But before we do that, here's Alan with the health news.
Although older women may face more potential pregnancy complications, their children seem to fare better in some ways over the long run, a new study suggests. Using data on over 1.5 million Swedish adults, researchers found that people born to mothers who were in their late 30s or 40s tended to be taller, fitter, and more educated than those born to younger moms. But that doesn't guarantee that being born to an older mother means a person will be fitter, taller, or more likely to aspire to a higher education. This study can only show an association between those factors. People are choosing to give birth at later ages, the study authors said. For example, in Germany and the United Kingdom, the average age at first birth is 30 years old. And in Sweden in 2013, more than one quarter of babies were born to women 35 and older, the report noted. Findings from the study were published recently in the journal Population and Development Review. Rosacea, the facial redness affecting millions of Americans, may be linked to a higher risk for dementia and Alzheimer's disease, new research suggests. However, the study authors were quick to stress that people with rosacea should not be overly worried about the finding. Lead author Dr. Alexander Egberg said it's important for patients to remember that having rosacea does not guarantee that they will develop Alzheimer's disease. In fact, while the risk in rosacea patients may be slightly increased compared with the general population, the absolute risk to any one patient is still quite low. Egberg is with the Department of Dermatoallergology at Herlev and Gentoft Hospital in Copenhagen, Denmark. In the new study, Egberg's team looked at 1997 to 2012 data from the Danish National Health Registry System. The investigators determined that people with rosacea faced a 7% greater likelihood for developing any form of dementia and a 25% higher risk for Alzheimer's disease in particular than people without rosacea. The findings were published April 28th in the Annals of Neurology. The food you eat and the medicines you take can alter your gut bacteria in ways that either help or harm your health, two new studies suggest. Foods like fruits, vegetables, coffee, tea, wine, yogurt, and buttermilk can increase the diversity of bacteria in a person's intestines. And that diversity can help ward off illness, said Dr. Jin-Yong Fu, senior author of one of the studies. To study the effect of lifestyle on the gut microbiome, Fu and her colleagues collected stool samples from more than 1,100 people living in the northern Netherlands. The samples were used to analyze the DNA of the bacteria and other organisms that live in the gut. In addition to stools, the study collected information on the participants' diets, medicine use, and health. In the second study, researchers with the Flemish Gut Flora Project performed a similar analysis on stool samples taken from 5,000 volunteers in Belgium. Both studies concluded that diet has a profound effect on the diversity of gut bacteria, although Fu said the underlying theories of these dietary factors remain largely unknown. Both studies were published in the April 29th issue of the journal Science. Even in cities with badly polluted air, the health benefits of walking or bicycling outweigh the risks of breathing dirty air, a new study contends. Researchers used computer simulations to try to compare the risks and benefits of walking or cycling in a range of air pollution levels. In most cities worldwide, the risks from air pollution do not cancel out the positive effects of cycling and walking, the study found. Only 1% of cities have air pollution levels high enough to negate the benefits of cycling 30 minutes every day, the researchers said. Study leader Dr. Marco Tonino of the University of Cambridge in England said the model indicates that in London, health benefits of active travel always outweigh the risk from pollution. Even in Delhi, one of the most polluted cities in the world, with pollution levels 10 times those in London, people would need to cycle over 5 hours per week before the pollution risks outweigh the health benefits. The study appears May 5th in the journal Preventive Medicine.
Well, thanks for that, Alan. Our first guest today is Cheryl Myers. She is our registered nurse with an integrated health nurse. She's an author and an expert in natural medicine, and hopefully she can speak better than I can today. But Cheryl, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here.
So we're talking about blood sugar today, and I'm wondering if you can simplify really what blood sugar is and how it works in our body and what it's, you know, what it's useful for. What are the benefits of having blood sugar in our system?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we need to have sugar in our bloodstream, mm-hmm. Because if we do not, we ourselves will starve to death and won't be able to function, and we will die. So there has to be some level of circulating blood sugar because it is the fuel that is used by our cells to perform their function, whether it's a bone cell to knit a broken bone, whether it's a brain cell to fire those neurons, whether it's a heart cell that needs to contract and help the heart pump. Whatever the case may be, every single cell in our body needs an uninterrupted flow of energy, and that energy is sugar. Now, when people hear the word sugar, they think right away candy bars and ice cream and, you know, chocolate cake. And while, yes, indeed, those contain sugar, all fuel that comes into the body gets turned, all the carbohydrates get turned into what they call blood glucose. So it gets turned into a form of sugar that the cells can use. So when we have low blood sugar, we're tired and we're weak and we don't feel very good and we might feel lightheaded. When we have high blood sugar, that's also very dangerous because high blood sugar, which is what more Americans struggle with, can lead to diseases like that can be an implication of type 2 diabetes. Mm-hmm. But high blood sugar keeps a compound in our bloodstream that should be entering our cells. And the longer it stays in the blood, the more irritating it becomes. I often think of sugar sort of like sand in the pipes. If you've got a little bit of sand in the pipes are just fine. But if you start to increase, it starts to become an irritant to the lining of the pipes and may cause some corrosion, may cause some damage. Well, that's sort of what happens when people have high blood sugars for long periods of time, is that they are introducing a compound into the body that's highly irritating for the lining of the blood vessels. And so that has major implications for the development of cardiovascular disease like atherosclerosis, but it also has implications for things like transient ischemic attacks or TIAs, they sometimes call them mini strokes, and out-and-out strokes. It has implications for kidney function. We often hear about people who have uncontrolled blood sugar being at the highest risk for the need of a kidney transplant. Well, it's because they damage that tiny microcirculatory system that brings blood to the kidney so that waste can be filtered. So it's very, very important that we try to keep our, I'm going to do a pun, forgive me, it's important to keep our blood sugar in the sweet spot. We don't want it to be so high that it's a constant irritant and sets us up for all kinds of major diseases, but we also don't want it to be so low that we don't have energy or can't perform the way we need to perform. We want to keep it right in the middle range, which is what sets us up for the most optimal long-term health outcomes.
I want to come back because you've brought up a couple interesting points. You know, we usually, can figure out the relationship between high blood sugar and diabetes, but we don't often hear about the relationship between high blood sugar and strokes or heart disease.
You know, that's really unfortunate because when we look at what happens in type 2 diabetes, a lot of people think, well, you get fat, you overeat, you're gluttonous, and you get type 2 diabetes. That's not true. It is true that uncontrolled eating and gaining a lot of weight can make you more at risk for type 2 diabetes, but experts believe that you start to develop something called insulin resistance, that the type 2 diabetes develops before you actually start to accelerate weight gain. And the reason for that is that our pancreas makes a hormone called insulin, and insulin is like a taxi cab. And insulin has a job, and that job is to pick up sugar and drive it into the cell. And the cells have to open the garage door so the taxi can drive in. If the cells stop opening the garage door, then those poor little taxi cabs are driving around, and they have nowhere to go. So bizarre as this may sound, diabetes is a disease of starvation because you have all this sugar in the blood, you have all this fuel in the blood, but it can't reach its destination to provide an energy source for the cells to do what the cells are supposed to do. So what happens to sugar that can't be used as fuel? It gets turned into the storage form of fuel, and that's fat. And so when you start to have a slowdown of the cell's ability to let insulin and sugar into the cell, we start to see broad system breakdown of many, many activities in the body. And we also generally see people start to pick up more weight because the fuel can't be used as fuel. It starts to get turned more and more into the storage form of fuel. So it's an important implication in a wide variety of diseases. When we look at, for example, eye damage, leading cause of blindness in America is diabetic retinopathy. And so when we look at what happens there, well, the retina of the eye, which is the nerve interface between the eye and the brain, the place at which, if there's any, if you want to pinpoint any place where vision takes place, it's the retina. Well, that's fed by the tiniest blood vessels in the body. They're called capillaries. And as we age and in certain health conditions, those capillaries can start to become more fragile. They can start to bulge. They can break. They can clog. But if you have a lot of sugar on board, because they're such tiny little capillaries in the first place, you're going to see that process accelerated. So when we look at carrying blood sugars that are too high, even if you're a person is not diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, maybe their sugars just run high enough that they're noticeable, but maybe not so high that they're diagnosed with a disease, you automatically set yourself up for greater risk for eye disease, kidney disease, heart disease, brain disease. Believe it or not, even hearing loss is associated with problems with proper circulation to the nerves in the ear. And the more sugar that you have on board, the more irritating it is to the blood vessel, and the more there is a disruption to that important blood supply to the nerves of the ear. So it really has, I can't think of very many activities in the body that can have more of a wide-ranging effect than to keep the blood sugar levels in the body within a healthy range.
What are the drivers of blood sugar? And has, you know, we're talking about an epidemic, you know, in the rates of high blood sugar and diabetes, you know, over the, you know, last decade or a couple decades. But I'm wondering, is there been any measurement of blood sugar change over the last 50 or 100 years?
Oh, goodness, yes. You know, the incident rates of type 2 diabetes are astronomical. I would say that they've probably in the last 100 years, they've increased well over 1,000%, well over tenfold. Diabetes used to be, first off, I want to make a differentiation. Type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disease that generally strikes children and young adults, and it's where the immune system of the body makes a mistake and starts to destroy the cells in the pancreas that produce insulin. People with type 1 diabetes have to be on injectable insulin their entire lives. Mm-hmm. Let's set that one aside because it's a very different disease. Type 2 diabetes, as best as can be thus far determined, starts as an inflammatory process and a problem with high blood sugar levels and increasing demands on the pancreas to release insulin and an increasing deafness, so to speak, of the cell's ability to listen to the signals of insulin. And some of that can be traced back to the changes in our diet. When we look at, for example, my parents, I like to think my parents loved me very much, but I grew up in an era where mamas were convinced that sugary cereals were perfectly fine for breakfast. Mm-hmm. So I went through my rotating supply of Captain Crunch and Cocoa Puffs and Sugar Smacks and Frosted Flakes and thinking that this was healthy food because it had vitamins and minerals in it. We also have taken more and more fiber out of our diet and replaced it with more and more simple carbohydrates. And so when we look at, for example, white rice versus brown rice, white rice is turned into sugar very, very easily because the packaging has been taken off. That little bran wrapping that has all the fiber in it that's intact in brown rice is lost in white rice. And so it drives, that's where they get that concept of the glycemic index. The foods that are more readily and more rapidly converted into sugar are high on the glycemic index and are more stressful on our body's insulin response versus foods that are low on the glycemic index. But I don't believe that that's the only thing. I also think that there's a huge impact, a couple of factors. For one, breastfeeding. It's been found that babies that are fed on infant formula have greater risk for type 2 diabetes than babies that are breastfed the first 6 months of life with no other foods introduced. I think another factor has to do with the changes in our food, not just that we've made more sugary foods or increased our sugar consumption or our refined carbohydrate consumption, but we've invented compounds that never existed in food before, like high fructose corn syrup and certain additives and artificial sweeteners. And all of these things can disrupt that delicate cycle in our body and disrupt the signaling that's so important to how our body manages blood sugar.
We're talking with Cheryl Myers. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be finding out more about blood sugar and how it affects your life.